What's up, everybody? It's your boy True Element 78 in the building, all by my lonesome. I am here to inform you guys that there will not be a new episode of Saturday Night Slamcasters this weekend due to scheduling conflicts. For those of you who do not know, Legacy Pro was scheduled to run a show last weekend, but due to a power outage at the building that they were going to run at, the show was rescheduled for this week. So with that happening, as well as Xavier Mustafa going under the knife to have the same surgery as the natural Chris Black, there will not be a new episode this weekend. And for those of you who have been asking for more ladies on the podcast, now we have two, so that should definitely suffice. With that being said, what we're going to give you guys is an episode from our YouTube channel, and it is going to be a episode that we did with Immortal Girlfriend, Will and Kevin Bush, The Dark Knights of Synth, where we discuss See No Evil Parts 1 and 2. And I know a lot of you guys have been waiting to hear our thoughts on the AEW Blood and Guts match, as well as the New Japan matches that have happened, especially Will Ospreay getting a 6-star match from Dave Meltzer. We will be dropping a special episode for you guys next weekend, so just stay tuned for that. We don't want to leave you guys high and dry or let that sit until our 4th week episode out of the month. But for those of you who haven't checked out the YouTube channel, you should definitely go over there and subscribe. Like I said, there's going to be an episode from our YouTube channel. Be sure to go over there and hit that subscribe button. Saturday Night Slamcast is very easy to go do. Also, if you like our content, leave us a thumbs up over there and ring that bell so you're notified whenever new episodes go out. And before we kick off this episode, I'm going to include some music from The Dark Knights of Synth, Immortal Girlfriend. The first song is actually going to be from Will Bush's solo project entitled Black Challenger, and the album was called Vigilance, and the track is going to be entitled Malevolent Pursuit. And then at the end of the episode, there's going to be the latest release from Immortal Girlfriend, which is called Others. And they actually just released a music video for that song, and it's getting a lot of traction and making a lot of waves here in Milwaukee and across the country. So I'll leave links to the music video in the description as well. But with that being said, enjoy the episode and holla at your boys. Come get slammed. Peace. We'll be right back. What's up, everybody? It's your boy, True Element 78, in the building with
your one and only reigning, defending Mondo Lucha Hall of Famer, the X-Man, Xavier Mustafa.
And we have some very special guests in the building with us for this very special episode where we will be reviewing WWE films See No Evil 1 and 2, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves now.
Yo, yo, this is Will.
I'm Kevin.
And we're a.k.a. the Dark Knights of Synth, a.k.a. Immortal Girlfriend.
And a.k.a. the Dark Challenger right here, Will.
Black Challenger, yes. Yes, sir.
Black Challenger.
In the building.
And one of the original co-hosts of a podcast with me back in the day, from 2007 until 2009.
Whoa.
Called Two Geeks and a Mic.
Yes.
Reunited and it feels so good. The best podcast I've ever been on. Because it didn't have Xavier Mustafa on it, but that's a story for a whole another day.
Those are strong sentiments right there, right out the gate, man. I don't know.
Well, I'm so sad. I wish I would have met you before today, and you would have warned me about the situation. I'm stuck in it now.
So how you guys doing?
Doing pretty good, man.
Good.
And I see you guys are back on the scene now, dropping new music, dropping Seeker, yeah. And you guys got some singles coming.
Yeah. We just dropped two singles.
What's up with you guys since the quarantine and everything? You got a couple of songs that have dropped. You got Others and you got Seeker.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we've just been in writing mode and also, I don't know, just like grind mode too. Like, I think right now we're really trying to, you know, break through, get to that next level. And it's kind of hard, you know, in the face of the pandemic. And I realize, you know, a lot of people out there have it, you know, way worse than we do. But, you know, anything live, you know, right now it's kind of suffering. So I guess we're just trying to get creative and think of other ways to implement, content, you know, and just what people are seeing from us and hearing from us.
Yeah, I know Others. I know I talked to you about this offline when I saw you a couple of weeks ago. Was much different than some of the other things that you guys have dropped recently. So.
Yeah, man. I mean, we took it back to our roots. And for us, I feel like a big part of our musical sound maybe even comes from, like, wrestling, like, low-key. Like, a lot of pay-per-views back in the day, a lot of those bands back in the day
had
a pretty big influence on our sound.
Yeah, a couple of days ago, I went back and I listened to WWF The Music, Volume 3 through Volume 6.
Dude.
And just... Yeah. Looking at the dynamics of the music that we grew up with, watching the product and everything like that is so much more generic now than it was back then. Like, you just got a feel for the characters just by the music that was associated with them. Now everything is more intense than elevated music, but none of it reflects the personalities of the people that they portray on screen.
Right.
That's because what's his name, Johnson?
Yeah, Jimmy Johnston.
CFO is gone.
Oh.
And CFO dollar sign was not good either, but I don't know who's making the music. But Jimmy Johnston.
It's better than Vince McMahon back there making it.
You might want to edit that out too.
He's back there being Kevin Dunn back there editing it. Speaking of which, brings us to the creative disasters that are See No Evil 1 and See No Evil Part 2. Which we're going to take them one by one, and then we'll discuss how they basically come together to make one pile by the end of this podcast. And, you know, I guess I'm being not too generous to the movies. I actually enjoyed the first movie more than I enjoyed part two, but we're going to get into all of that. I'm just going to run out some stats real quick about See No Evil Part 1. Me and Will here, we actually saw this movie together in theaters when it released. Back in 2006, May 19th, 2006, to be specific. And this had been being built up for half a year, pretty much, with Kane losing the mask and everything in WWE and coming out with the chain and the hook and remember May 19th, remember May 19th and all of those promos. You guys may remember that. Like, what did you think back then watching the product?
I was like, I'm not going to see this movie.
Yeah, I know you just said this was your first time seeing the movies.
Yep, today. Both of them.
I mean, I honestly, I wasn't planning on seeing it, But the way they built it up, I did kind of like how they implemented it with this character. Because when you watch the movie, I feel like that's pretty much like a shadow version of Kane. You know what I mean? Like, or a shadow version of
the Phantom Realm version. Right.
You know what I mean? So I think I like the dynamics that were there, how they kind of tried to implement it. Some of it felt a little forced. Like, you know what I mean? Where he's just like, May 19th. Like, he's kept saying that date. Yeah. Like, this is a little bit, you know, beating us over the head with it. But, yeah, that was, I feel like that was an interesting thing for them to do at the time.
Yeah. What about you, Kev?
I feel like I didn't remember any of that until you just brought it up. But yeah, I remember that. It was a little, they were being extra with it. But wasn't this their first WWE movie?
This was the biggest production that they have done up to this point. Like, there were other films that had the WWE tag on them, like The Mummy had it, The Rundown had it.
The Rundown.
Oh, dude, yeah.
They even went back and did the No Holds Barred, has the WWE logo in there just because their talent was there. Right. So as far as films go, See No Evil was the biggest budget thing I believe they had done to that point that was funded by Vince McMahon himself. He's actually executive producer on See No Evil 1. Right. And just looking at the product now of what they do with The Fiend, Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
This movie was the precursor to the Firefly Funhouse and everything that, like all these cinematic films look like See No Evil Part 1. And like I said, we're going to discuss at the end comparing the two movies, but you see two where Vince McMahon was not executive producer, and it's a completely different vibe, filmed completely differently. And yeah, so like I said, when his hands were in it, and you look at the product now of what we get with these creepy characters and different things like that.
Right.
It reflects See No Evil Part 1.
I agree.
Nth degree. So
I got a question for you two, since you guys seen it when it came out. Without going into detail, what was your reaction to seeing it then versus seeing it now?
Seeing it then, I thought it was trash, just complete trash. I was like, this was a waste of time. Will, why did we come see? I think movies back then were $9.50. I was like, why did we spend $9.50 on this? I was working at McDonald's. Like, man. What a waste of money. I remember you were in a band back then, too.
Yeah, no, I think that was around when I was just starting to kind of play guitar. I think we were in our first rock band back then, but. No, I remember some of those deaths. I remember, like, I remember that there was like a cell phone death. I remember that. But outside of that, it was interesting to watch it now because I feel like just who I am as a person, my understanding of like cinematography, storytelling, you know what I mean? Like, just from watching wrestling alone, I feel like it can give you an idea of like where stories are going. So if we're getting into it, what I liked about the first movie was how they set it up. It was kind of like the Breakfast Club meets like Friday the 13th. You know what I mean?
It was funny.
That's kind of how they went about it, and that's kind of what was one of the dynamics that I liked about that movie.
Yeah, the pushback I'll give against The Breakfast Club is that The Breakfast Club developed characters, and this movie didn't develop characters at all except for Michael,
right.
who pretty much was everything that's wrong with the WWE right now when it comes to characterization, is that he does all the bad things, and then he does one good thing.
Yeah, he's redeemed.
And we're supposed, he's supposed to be redeemed 100%. And I guess we need to throw out there that this is a spoiler review of the movie if you haven't seen it yet. But, yeah, so I'm just going to run down a couple more things with the movie. So it was directed by Gregory Dark, written by Dan Mittigan. It had a budget of $8 million. Its opening weekend, which me and Will were a part of, it grossed $4.5 million. And the worldwide gross in the end, I believe, was $16.7 million. And I had wrote down that this movie encapsulated every horror trope. And like you said, being older now and having seen more of these movies and understanding cinematography, understanding storytelling, understanding continuity and all of these different things in movies, I said that this was a cross between Candyman and Friday the 13th and Michael Myers, especially Michael Myers. But they even did like the whole cha-cha-cha thing. I'm surprised he didn't get sued for that throughout this movie.
And they had the Friday the 13th twist. They had the Candyman, except for Candyman was bees. This right. was flies every time he's going right. to make an appearance.
Right, right.
The two-way mirrors and him coming through and attacking people. Mm-hmm. The hook. Like, all of these different things were just taken completely from all these other horror movies to make this movie. So, yeah, See No Evil Part 1, as I was watching it, I was like, this is the Marjorie Taylor Greene story. That's what I took away from this movie. Because
you talk about just, like, indoctrination.
Yeah, indoctrination, extreme. They don't really give us a religion thing, but like evangelical like type
right.
stuff.
Right.
Where like, oh, you see the evil and everything. And in the movie, I thought it was kind of funny. I was like, this is metaphorical because he had literal brain rot.
Oh, sure.
And it will rot your brain to be that indoctrinated into dogma.
Sure, sure.
Into a dogma.
Right.
Where you have this one focus, this one driving force.
For sure.
But, yeah, I already talked about the character Michael, who was an asshole. He's played by Luke Pegler. And out of everybody in this that was in this movie, he went on to be the most successful. He had spots in Spartacus, the TV show. He was on Hacksaw. He was in the movie Hacksaw Ridge.
Okay.
So.
Good for him.
But everybody else in here, their careers pretty much petered out in 2016. Like nobody else really went on to do much from the research that I saw.
Okay.
You know what, to let you know how the character development was, is I don't even know which one was Michael.
Exactly. Well, he was the main guy who was just an asshole for no reason, destroying stuff in the hotel.
He had a pipe.
Throwing cans at dogs. He had a pipe.
Yeah, that was his most notable.
Like I literally had the right, like I was watching the movie and it was moving so fast. I was like, you showed us these characters, you didn't really introduce any of them. We hear their names fleeting.
Right.
But pretty much this movie starts with some prisoners. Actually, I said I was gonna run down like the narrative of the movie for everybody. But before I do that,
sure,
I want to the IMDb score for this is a 5.1 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes has it at a 9%, and I watched it on Vudu and had a 3.8 out of 5. Which at the end of watching it actually, what would you rate it? I gave it a 3.5 out of 5. So. Right. I thought that was pretty fair.
That's about where I'd probably put it too.
Right. So the synopsis for the movie says, a group of delinquents are sent to clean the Blackwell Hotel. Little do they know, reclusive psychopath Jacob Goodnight has holed away in the rotting hotel. When one of the teens is captured, those who remain, a group that includes the cop who put a bullet in Goodnight's head 4 years ago, band together to survive against the brutal killer. So... yeah, starts off with these two cops going to what looked like a dilapidated church.
Right.
Where it's boarded up and everything. There's candles lit, looking like there's about to be a human sacrifice. And they find this lady on the ground.
There's music playing. There's this, that Jesus loves little children. Like, that, my only critique with that is, is that in somebody's head? Is that actually playing out of a radio?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like they never touched
it. It was like that song would just randomly come on, and I'm like, is this like in like Jacob Goodnight's head, or you know, like
right? They never touch on that. And then the other thing they never touch on is I want to know why he was there instead of being like where his mother was was this where he was living? Like why? Like. Because they show us these glimpses of him as a child and everything being tortured by his mother and indoctrinated. And eventually, we're kind of jumping around, but like just seeing the little relationship between him and his mother in glimpses, but you never know the location of where any of this is happening.
Right.
But like I said, the cops show up to this place. They find this lady and she's screaming and frantic and everything. They never show her face, but you see the cops' reactions when they see her face. One of the cops gets hacked to death. And then as Kane or Jacob Goodnight comes through this, like, those little plastic curtains that they have, like, in butcher shops and different things for the freezer or cooler.
Right.
The cop shoots him in the head, and Kane slices off his arm.
And walks out.
Which was funny to me, like, not that he got his arm chopped off, but what was funny to me was that later on, they never emphasized that the cop that was the same cop and that he had a fake arm. Like we were just supposed to know.
Right.
instead of like them really identifying who he was. Like
I will defend that. You did see the little thing.
You saw it, but
if you didn't pay attention to it,
yeah, you didn't pay attention because there's a scene where the cop comes to the room where two. I'm not gonna jump around. All right, let me set up. So they go 4 years late, 4 years into the future. So 4 years in the future, there's a group of people in jail. I guess they're about to be let out on like a work release thing where they go do work cleaning up this hotel, the Blackwell Hotel that was mentioned earlier. They're going to spend 3 days there cleaning and they get 1 month taken off of their sentences. So they're at the male prison. You see the guys that are going to be working headed towards a bus. And then we go to the bus where there are female inmates on there who have the same deal that's going to happen with them. So when they arrive at the hotel, they're greeted by Margaret, who we later find out is Margaret Goodnight, which is Jacob Goodnight's mother, obviously. Mm-hmm. But we don't know that at the time. And
or do we?
Right.
And so everybody's supposed to go. So all the inmates are supposed to go clean up this hotel. There's supposed to be like 72 floors, which doesn't even look like 72 floors. No. And even show the hotel from the outside at all. Like the penthouse is on the 72nd floor. Yeah, Don't go there. There's a fire. It's like you showed us this from the ground. I think I only counted like 22 floors. Like,
right.
You're making shit up. This isn't the Towering Inferno. So anyways, now I've set that up. So there's a scene where obviously their prisoners are not supposed to have any contraband like cigarettes or anything like that, where the girls are smoking and the cop comes in, he takes the pack of cigarettes, he lights it up and starts smoking. And then they made a comment about, do you think he jacks off with that thing? And I was like, what are they talking about? I was so confused.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I will say this. At that point, and just as Mustafa pointed out, He was holding the pack of cigarettes, like he had his hand there. So there was a shot where you could clearly see like his.
Yeah, I didn't go back. I didn't rewind it.
For sure. I don't blame you.
I didn't rewind. I was like, I'm getting through this damn movie.
For time's sake.
I'm like, I'm not rewinding crap in this movie.
Right,
so
right. Here's the thing. That's even a minor detail that doesn't matter in the end. Like,
you know what I mean? It really doesn't. Like I said, like everybody who you wanted to root for and see make it any length of this movie. None of them did anything of any merit.
Sure.
It was like the worst people survived in the end, for the most part.
Here's one of the things I didn't get about the beginning of the movie, okay? It looked like the females and the males were coming from the same place.
Right.
Well,
why did they take different buses? Both buses had plenty of room on it. And then why did the one girl had condoms?
No, they all hopped on the same bus.
Yeah.
Did they?
Yeah.
Because I thought it was one scene where they had the girls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was one scene where the girls arrived at the prison to get the guys.
Okay.
And then they all rode to the hotel together.
Okay, then I wasn't paying attention then. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, again, why did she have condoms? Where did she get condoms from? And what was she using them for? It was all females.
Because she was ready to get it in. She knew there was going to be some guy. Remember, she took them out of the purse of the.
I said that was.
She was the one that wasn't going to get nobody nothing.
And it was also funny because.
Right. That's true.
Because in both.
Not him, I guess.
Because also in both movies, it was funny that the blondes were the slutty ones. But then the one who was supposed to be slutty wasn't even the one who gave it up. Like the people who ended up having. I guess they had sex or started having sex. And Jacob figured this out because he had all the beds rigged with bells. So if you started bouncing and rocking on if the bedroom was a rocking, the bells came a ringing.
So you mean to tell me this guy is apparently isn't the most intelligent person in the world was able to rig all of those, like, you ain't getting busy nowhere.
Yeah.
Remember,
I'm gonna make sure.
But you're forgetting
74 bells.
You're forgetting he was working with his mother.
That's true.
And being a fundamentalist will drive you to do things.
And then there was this one part where they ran into like one of the wires, and then they just kept jingling. And I'm like, why would you do that?
Right.
I just like to look at the disgust on his face when he realized the people were having sex on the bed. He looks at the bell. He's like,
oh man, ultimate cock block. I don't know.
Not Jason Voorhees still has him beat for the ultimate cock block. like you be pulling your underwear down, Jason. Like, ching, slice.
Right. Well, I guess honestly, even that analogy right there that we have, like with Jason, is pretty direct. Like that's pretty much the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Like this mother son you know, like this weird thing with like people get it in, you know, sinning,
yeah, sinning, right. I guess. At least Jason had more of a reason, but I sure. Well, actually, you know what? I'll give Jason more credit. Jason actually lets people finish before he comes and murders them. Okay. Like, he at least lets them get it in. Like, Jason was like, I died because people were having sex, so no sex for nobody. Sure.
Okay. There you go, right? That's fair enough.
So, this. It's just funny to me that. So. I didn't write down every single character in the movie, but I believe there were like 9 characters.
Right.
There was Christine, Kira, Michael, Tyson, Zoe, Melissa, Richie, Russell.
There you go.
And Margaret.
All right. Well, Richie was the first person that got killed.
That's the first time I heard any of those names. They don't introduce them that way.
Yeah. Richie was the first one that got killed, and all I knew about him was that he had a map. He knew that all the secret passageways were real. And he ended up seeing that dead hobo and hauling ass.
Yeah.
Okay, again, if he was in prison, where did he get this map from?
That's a good question, man.
Hey, we can't act like people in prison don't be getting information, getting papers from
and
somewhere.
And then he was bogus as hell for leaving the black guy. Then he got caught, and then he wanted the black guy to help him. So I wasn't mad, dude. Was like, you on your own, bro. You on your own.
And so, I appreciate them not killing the black guy first.
Right? Yeah.
I noted that.
Well, actually, remember, Richie didn't die. He didn't kill Richie. Richie was alive to see Kira or whatever in the cage, and then he got his eyes plucked out. So he was not the first one to die. I believe the first one to die was the
wasn't it that woman?
It was the horny guys. Yeah, it was Russell and Melissa, and we barely knew anything about them. All we knew was Melissa was vegan or vegetarian, and that she shaved her legs so that she could get it in with Russell. And so Russell was the first one to get killed, and he was like Mexican, so they took out they took out a person of color first in this movie, as he was trying to lower Melissa down to the ground with the fire hose wrapped around her waist.
Yep.
And then Kane gave Melissa exactly what she asked for to let her go. And so she ended up falling, to the ground to break, not to the ground to die, but to break her arm and then be killed by dogs.
Right. That was
gruesome.
Yeah.
That was the one thing about this movie. They gave us some pretty creative kills, and they actually gave us killed and bloody.
Right.
It was bloody. The main fault of this movie, like, I'm not going to continue to run down everything about all the characters. Sure. I just wanted to give an idea of how much we actually knew about these characters that we were supposed to care about or be invested in at all.
Right.
But that's the one thing that this movie had. And in B movies, typically, especially low budget ones, you'll get some blood, some type of practical effects and everything like that. But this one went over and beyond, I believe, on even the way that Jacob was killed in the end of the movie. It was CGI. It wasn't all practical effects, but it was still creative.
It was like a fatality. You know what I mean? It was like, hey, here's his heart being destroyed or whatever, you know? So I appreciated that because that's
I appreciate it being a bloody movie. Like in 2021, we don't get, this was released in theaters. We don't get this stuff released in theaters these days. A movie like See No Evil, I don't think would make it to cinemas. Not due to budget or anything like that, just due to the brutality.
I was kind of noting that because I was thinking, I was like, you know, especially when you talk about any kind of like violence against women that's seen on screen.
Yeah.
The thing about these movies is, I think the thing that probably separates it from some other horror movies is the fact that they really tried. I mean, obviously, you can only do so much, but they really tried to ground this in some reality. There wasn't really a supernatural aspect to it, you know what I mean?
Well, he got shot in the head.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, they tried, but the whole idea was that, you know, I don't know, he didn't really lose anything when he got shot in the head. You know what I mean? Like, he was already kind of this weird monster. So I feel like just the way they, like, for both movies, you know, the way they went about it, they try to ground it in some.
Well, not a second movie.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
The second movie wasn't grounded at all. Second movie, the people who made it deserve to be grounded. But, yeah, like, the first movie, overall, like I said, the main faults of this movie, I gave it a 3.5 out of 5, like I said, on Voodoo after I watched it. Mm-hmm. The main thing about this movie that made it bad was the characterization. They didn't flesh out the characters. I didn't care about any of them. I didn't know any of their names. If I hadn't looked up the names, probably the only name I would have known from the movie, and I guess it makes sense because they were the survivors, at least two of them, I would have knew Kira's name and I would have knew Michael's name.
Right.
But that would have been it. Like,
okay.
Like Ty, I wouldn't necessarily remember his name. Zoe wouldn't remember the name. Like I said, these are names I'm reading that I actually wrote down. So
the only reason I know the name is because we had the captions on, like when we were watching recently. By the way, this is on, at least currently, it's on HBO Max.
Ah, so I didn't have to buy it. God.
So,
I bought it.
I feel like there's almost, but see how the, I was noting to Kevin, I'm like, the first movie is on HBO Max, the second one is not.
Yeah, because the second one was a straight-to-video release, right. And Lionsgate is part of the AT&T family, which is who released this film. So, that's the reason that part one is over there on HBO Max. I wish I had known that because I actually bought one and I bought two.
Oh, man.
So now I'm the proud owner of See No Evil 1 and See No Evil 2. So for anybody out there that's listening, especially any lovely ladies out there, you will be tortured by this movie with me showing it to you because if I bought it, it's getting viewed more than once, damn it.
Oh, man, that's funny.
And then the other character that lived was Christine. So we had Michael, we had Kira, and we had Christine. Those were the ones that survived.
Right.
So I was actually happy to see the chick live. And it was also a twist, too, because we think back to this time period of horror movies, mm-hmm. the sole survivor, and they broke that mold. Right. We didn't just have the sole survivor. We
it's
had
like a handful. Like,
yeah, we had three survivors. So, right. But oh boy, did they make up for that in the next movie.
So, any more thoughts on the first movie?
I feel like because I remember seeing it like maybe a year after it came out, and. I mean, I didn't think Kane was scary, per se. I think the character was cool. And it was the first time you'd ever seen anything like that. I mean, I guess The Rock had been in films, but they were doing something different. But watching it again, I enjoyed it for what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't trying to reinvent the wheel. Like, it wasn't trying to be like this. We've seen giant 7-foot, mm-hmm. killers before. So I think what it did, I enjoyed it. I didn't hate it. Right. It's better than the second one.
Yeah, it was definitely I'd say it was a way more enjoyable film than the second one, for sure.
Right.
I enjoyed the brutality of it. Yeah. Like, I liked that he was just throwing people around and choke slamming people to death and all kind of stuff like that. But, yeah, like you said, it's your standard horror movie.
Well, actually, special. I was just about to say, I also liked it because it wasn't a standard horror movie. It's funny you said the standard horror movie. And I was going to say, he actually had a purpose. Like, it wasn't just a slasher film.
Right.
He was taking people's eyeballs out who he felt were sinful or whatever, or full of sin. Even though it was kind of funny that, you know, I don't know how you guys were raised growing up, like, or if you know people who were raised where, oh, tattoos are sinful, having earrings are sinful, and everything like that. And then so like when his mother comes in the end, she's like, she's a whore, she's a slut, look at the tattoos, can't you see? But they're like crosses, so he's conflicted, like she's marked with the sign of the Lord.
Right.
And you're calling me the hand of God.
Right. No, I guess my final thought on the movie is I did like his character, like you said, he had purpose, but he even had a slight arc, even at the end where it was like he was conflicted and that brought him to a slightly different place, which is interesting to see for a character, because that's the first time that, you know, for I guess maybe for my second viewing of seeing a heel or a villain in that role,
right,
like having like a slight bit of sympathy, I feel like it's cool. And then you just kill him off, then it's like okay, like then you could kill him, you almost get this sense of he was a victim too of himself, like, right. You know what I mean, to a degree.
He was a victim of what he was taught by the person he trusted to take care of him.
Right.
So,
I do want to defend myself for a second. The reason why I say standard is because when I watch a horror movie, if I'm still thinking about it 3, 4, 5 hours later that night, the next day, it's a good horror movie. This wasn't really, to me, better than average horror movie, sure. because at then went off, I was like, okay, I'm not scared about anything. I'm not thinking about nothing. Yeah. You know, I'm just
not
like,
sad about anything.
You know, you watched The Exorcist.
You're not thinking about all that sin you've been committing and losing your eyeballs.
I mean, you watch something like The Exorcist or something like that, like a couple hours later, you're like, man, that was nuts.
Oh, I did want to make two more comments about the movie.
Okay.
Like I said, spoilers, when he killed his mother and he threw her into the spikes.
Man, Mortal Kombat again.
Well, when he threw her into the spikes, I was like, and I remember thinking this when me and you saw it in theaters. I was like, they should have, instead of just sticking spikes through her body, it should have been literally a needle through her eye.
Oh, okay.
I was like, it should have been a spike to like her eye or something like that, right. Which eventually that's what happened to him.
Sure.
That he took a spike to the eye or a pole to the eye or whatever.
Right.
And then the thing with the flies, I was like, he's taking people's eyeballs. I would have much rather like his friends be like crows or something. Like there'd be like a nest of crows or something like that. Because you always hear those stories. At least I know when I was a kid, kids used to be like, oh, don't mess with the crows because the crows eat your eyes. Like don't be sinful. Crows will eat your eyes or whatever.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, it definitely has like that kind of nursery rhyme kind of like demented universe nature to it.
Right. All right, so we can move on to See No Evil Part 2, unless anybody else has anything else to throw on See No Evil Part 1.
See No Evil 2, off the rails.
All right, so.
If there were rails.
Yeah. If there were.
From now.
Right. So, See No Evil Part 2 was released direct to video on October 21st, 2014. So, we had a 8-year gap between the releases of movies, but Part 2 picks up right where Part 1 left off, with all the bodies being discovered at the Blackwell Hotel and transport of all the bodies, including Jacob Goodnight, to the morgue. So this movie received 4.7 out of 10 on IMDb, 60% on Rotten Tomatoes. Is way better than the 9% that the first movie got.
How does this,
I will explain exactly how they got that rating.
Okay.
And then it received a 3.6 out of 5 on Voodoo. I gave this movie a 3. So.
Out of 5?
Yeah, 3 out of 5. Whoa. Remember, I gave the first one 3.5.
I gave this movie a 2.
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
Like,
this is
that's more accurate to me.
And I'll explain why.
Okay.
Because this movie does the thing that's most important in a movie, that it gets right, but it doesn't have the gruesomeness. It doesn't have, and he's a brainless killer in this movie,
right?
Yeah,
which I didn't like.
Yeah,
he didn't have a purpose. It was like nothing. He was just a killing machine in this movie, which was trash. That's why I took a half a point off. Right. But it earned 2 points because what this movie does better than the first movie, characterization. They actually knew the names of characters and actually cared about some of them too, way more than I cared about the ones in the first movie. Not to say that I'm crying when they die or anything like that, but I knew who they were and I knew what their ambitions were. Like they created relationships. In the first movie, there were no relationships there. There was a relationship that was supposed to be between Kira and Michael that she used to work for him and he used to beat her ass or whatever. But that's never really explored besides him choking her in the shower.
Right.
In this, you got the relationship between Seth and Amy and Will, who is Amy's brother. So you have some connections there.
All right, I'll give you that.
And it's Amy's birthday, and all these people are there for her party, so like they're supposed to be friends and everything.
I'll give you that, but everything else was trash.
Yeah, everything else was trash. But in a movie, characterization is very important. And this actually gets that right.
Here's the thing. I will say that is important. We have to care about who dies and, you know, who lives. But it's hard when the purpose that these people are dying just feels...
Yeah.
I don't know, you know what I mean? That was my biggest gripe with that movie, too, was that he didn't have purpose. I was like, he should have stayed dead. Because I was like, he comes back. He's like, oh, I'm still struggling with this idea. He's just like, all right, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to kill everything. It's just like,
and he's not even taking people's eyeballs. He's just a killing machine.
He's just like, all right, like, you guys have to die. And the other thing is, he didn't know that everyone was having sex.
Right.
He didn't know that. Now he's like,
well, he didn't know that in the first. He didn't know that in the first one. Like, right. They were just there.
I mean,
and because his mother was like, oh, they're all coming from jail.
Right. He at least had the bell thing, though. That's what I feel like.
Well, The only thing that he knew in the first one about anybody besides guess, the people no, he caught right. having sex were, right. oh, we're going to get the people from the prison to come sure. to come here.
That they're automatic, like.
That they're all bad people because right. they're from jail or whatever. Sure. In the second movie, yeah, he didn't know anything about any of these people besides the people he right. caught having sex. Mm-hmm. So he's just like.
I mean, maybe.
It's creepy.
Right.
By the way. Yeah. We'll get there. We'll get there.
So let me bring up a point because we compared the first movie to Friday the 13th, right? Now, at what point and for what reason did it become supernatural?
Well, like I said, this was Michael Myers. Right. This movie was just Michael Myers. That's all it was.
Because remember, in Friday the 13th, Jason didn't become supernatural until right. they dug him up and tried
he
to
He didn't become supernatural until 3
and they,
or 4.
They,
what, they, 4? Sure,
exactly.
Yeah.
Which so I feel like by then it was more of a plot device because it was like, it doesn't make sense that dude's alive. It's like, let's just give him like... extra means. I am trying to think of which one he did become fully supernatural.
That's when they dug him up. It was, one guy
yeah,
dug him
it was
up.
Three.
And he put the thing to him, and the lightning bolt hit.
It was yep. three, and then four is when he got the mask.
I think I was watching. It was maybe it was.
Wait, is three the one I'm talking about?
No, three is when he became supernatural, I believe, or it was four. It was whenever he got the mask, which I think was four. So I think all that happened in the fourth one, and we got 11.
There was Jason Goes to Hell, where he becomes.
Jason Goes to Hell was
he
after.
He becomes like ethereal, like his body was destroyed, but he like his spirit went into people.
Yeah, but remember that was when he got buried, when they buried him or whatever, he went to hell and everything. So yeah. he was supernatural before that.
Okay,
and then he went to hell. Jacob, good night. First of all. All right, so let me point out some Tyler Perry level trash. The part where he was laying on the table and the girl was all like kissing on him and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Right, first of all, you can see him breathing. Sure. You can see his stomach breathing, which was trash. And then all of a sudden, then at that point, he woke up. How did he woke up? We saw the thing go through his heart like Mortal Kombat 11.
Right. Yeah. It's like that was somehow survivable.
That fall, the spike to the eye,
yeah.
the fall, yeah. break, shattering everything in his body, the dog pissing in his eye.
Yeah.
Like he just went through all of this, and then he was resurrected for what reason?
Right.
8 years later, like anybody
That's what
was I'm like anybody was begging for a sequel. But I'm gonna run down the release date. I already said October 21st, 2014. The directors of this movie were Jen Soska and Sylvia Soska. These are twin sisters, and at this time they had a lot of buzz around them for a pretty important and pretty dope horror movie, that came out around this time. What was the name of that movie? I have it on my list of movies to own. I've had it in my wish list for a while. It never goes on sale. American Mary. That's what it was called. And this movie also had an up-and-coming star, and I do not have her real name in front of me. But she was Tamara in this movie, or Tamara. She's the one who actually...
Catherine Isabel?
Yeah. Her name is on the cover of the movie, but she's not even in the entire movie.
That's weird.
And she's the one who humps on Kane in the movie and everything like that. See, what I was actually expecting to happen when they were having sex, I thought she was going to look over and he was going to have an erection.
Oh.
And she was going to lose her shit. And she was going to lose her shit like, look. And then they go over there and she's getting ready to pull the blanket back and he just grabs her or throws her or something. I didn't expect what actually happened to happen with the lights going out and the body disappearing and all of that.
That whole scene, man. Damn.
Also, I ran down the writer of See No Evil 1. The writers of See No Evil 2 were Nathan Brooks and Bobby Lee Darby. And I guess WWE was contracting writers at this time.
Okay.
These guys might have been writing for WWE, who knows? Because they also wrote 12 Rounds, Round 3 with Dean Ambrose. They wrote See No Evil 2, and they also wrote The Eliminators, which had Stu Bennett in it. I got some bad news.
Oh wow. Okay, so they have a history of like wrestling oriented films.
Yeah, and this movie went straight to video and it has a $1.6 million box office, which you could tell this is one of those $5 million budget movies. So even though they leave it open ended at the end for See No Evil 3, and we'll discuss that at the end of this.
Oh man.
But I don't see it happening. But we'll discuss.
Not with Glenn Jacobs being a mayor, I don't think we're going to see any more Scene of Evils. Unless they recast them kind of like they do the, what's the movie with they had John Cena in a lot? Then they had the Miz.
What, the Marine?
Yeah. Unless they do it like the Marine.
For sure.
All right, so
get Braun Strowman. Braun Strowman in there. Yeah. Or that.
See No Evil 3 with The Fiend.
Hey, I'm going to copyright this. Don't steal my idea, Vince. Unless you're going to pay me.
I don't think Vince takes anybody else's ideas at all.
Now it's not going to happen.
But so I said this movie had better characterization, but the thing this movie does worse than any movie I've seen in a long time is continuity. Everything from his eye patch. So they show us a flashback from the first movie that shows he got stabbed in his left eye. And then when they come back from the flashback and he's sitting there, it's his right eye that has the bandage on it. But it goes back and forth through this movie at least five times that I counted, where it's on his left eye, it's on his right eye. It's on his left eye, it's on his right eye.
I think I was because we were talking about that. I was like, is he looking in a mirror right now?
Yeah, that's what I suggested. Because when he was laying on the
Even if he was looking in a mirror, it would still be the correct eye.
But if the camera were looking at the mirror, he was looking
in. But you're looking at it, so you would be like, it would still be the left eye. It wouldn't even matter.
I know what you mean. Right. I was trying to make it make sense.
I wanted it to make sense. Because I thought the same thing, too. I was like, okay, maybe we're looking at him through a window or a mirror or something. But I'm like, no. I even did the experiment. I was like, so it's on this eye. I went and looked in the mirror. And I'm like, it's still this eye.
Right. Right.
So, and then even the clothes, like, they were like, he sliced Seth's arm and shoulder through his shirt, and then at the end he's going to the car, and his shirt is perfectly fine. He just has a slight blood. This guy had a blade probably like 4 inches down his shoulder, and all he has is a slight blood stain. On his shirt. I was like, this is outlandish at this point.
Plus the I feel like the blood in the second one was weaker, man.
There was limited blood in the second one. Like, it was more stains, and then like the bloodiest part, which was the part where I said, this is when I started hating the Seth character, because I wrote down in my notes, I was like, Seth, pussy. Like, that's only, I was like, he has a crush on Amy and he's pussy. Like, she wants to go back and save her brother, and he's just saying, no, we gotta go. And she's like, I'm going, and he's like, okay, I'll come with you.
Yeah.
But
beta male.
But I also call beta. Beta.
They went all the way, like, okay, first of all, let's talk about this ridiculous morgue that's like 14 stories.
The biggest morgue ever.
Like, remember how you said they made the hotel seem like it was so big, but it was small? Yeah. This was the opposite. This should have been small. This seemed huge.
Yeah.
Because they had all these doors, all these hallways, all these floors.
So this must have been a morgue in Detroit, because this thing was huge. They got to store a lot of bodies in there.
Bro had a key couldn't open one door. It opened everything else but one door on one floor.
This is the morgue that Andrew Cuomo has.
He's so stupid, dude.
Andrew Cuomo wishes he had this morgue.
Wow.
But the point I was making is he took her all the way down the hallway, down some steps, and then went all the way back after she said, let's go back.
Yeah. And what was the other thing Seth did? Oh, also, Seth got Tamara killed. She's sitting there. He's like, run. And as soon as she gets up to run, she gets clotheslined by a fucking machete.
Which, I'm going to say her fault on that.
That was the bloodiest scene in the whole thing. Well, she ran directly at him.
Yeah.
Right.
Still, Seth was like, run. Why don't you go pussy ass run? Why don't we fight?
That was, no, I don't know. I feel like I had a harder time connecting with the characters in the second movie. I was like, oh, okay, like, you're done.
Right, and when I was watching Tamara, and I know you guys have been watching the products a little bit more lately, the WWE product, but when I was watching the Tamara character with the stockings and the short skirt and everything, I was like, she's the prototype for what they had Billy Kay doing now, just being stupid. And the thing that I didn't understand, this movie does the horror trope that I always hate, when people see something scary and they try to run away, but instead of like actually trying to run, like the first movie got it right. They saw something scary, they hauled ass. In this movie, they saw something scary, they're looking back, they're falling and tripping all over themselves, like the floor has
making all kind of noise.
I'm like, was the Usos out there slicking their hair down or something on set? Like, why are y'all slipping and falling everywhere?
All that sweat, man.
I mean, this guy was so intelligent. He had doors chained up. Where's all this chain in the morgue? Right. That's
exactly. I said that too. Exactly. I was like, where did he find a blade with a chain on it? Right.
Or all these weird, like, curved blades. I was like, did they use this at the morgue?
And I was kind of I thought it was a dope thing that they did, but I was highly offended by it at the same time. Oh,
you're gonna say what I was thinking right now.
The guy in the wheelchair?
Yep.
I like the fact that he stabs him in the leg and he doesn't realize why he can't move. And he turns around, he's like, oh, I've been stabbed. Right. But then I was like, man, that was just bogus. He had no reason to die at all.
Yeah, right.
Like
yeah. Right. No, that's my biggest thing is like, yeah, the kills are cool to see, but when you give them some purpose, it's like, oh, okay, he's mad because this or that. But you never really got a sense of other than like a, like you said, just a mindless killing machine.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like when you start having that, that does away with some of the character.
Because I just thought about this too, and I'm going to compare it to a more recent movie, Joker. The first movie was a lot more like Joker than the second movie. Like, you can even, like, because remember when Joker was going to kill the... we're politically incorrect on when he's gonna kill the midget. And he let him live.
Right.
That's pretty much the first movie. Like he's like, oh, she's got the religious tattoo.
I was gonna say,
I'm gonna let her go.
But that lets you know that
he has some empathy.
There's a little more layers.
This human. There's some human inside of there.
Right. Right.
And this one, he didn't give a damn who you were, what you were. She's like, that's my brother and stuff, and he hadn't done anything. Yep. Like, I guess he made out with a chick, but that was it. Seth was a damn virgin. He was scared to even ask the girl out on a date. So, like I said, the second movie was atrocious from the continuity standpoint. The only thing, two did everything worse. That two did everything bad that one got right, and then one did everything bad that two got right, which was mainly just characterization. One could go down as a really good B flick movie,
right?
If it had good characterization, like if we actually cared about the people, it would not be that bad of a movie.
I agree.
The fact that people were just dying that we didn't even know who their names were was what made one bad. Two, we knew who the characters were. You might not have known their names, but you at least had some ambitions behind them,
right?
But yeah, they're just being stalked by a killing machine. He's not collecting souvenirs from them anymore. You're seeing flashbacks to the first movie,
which is a cheap. I feel like that's kind of a cheap way to just tie continuity because it's like, oh yeah, remember when this happened? And it's like,
yeah, it was cooler
8 years ago too. Though here's the thing: to have an 8-year time jump and not really address it in a movie, I was like, you can do that. And Kane, you know, Glenn Jacobs, he looked good for the role. Like if you think about 8 years, he looked pretty good. You know, like, but outside of that, I feel like with that amount of time, I was like, they probably just went with whatever like initial idea was for a sequel. It's like, you know what? We're going to pick right up and do this.
The thing I also was laughing about from one to two, and one, he was like pasty, pale, slimy because he had never been outside. Right. And two, he has pigmentation even though he was supposed to have been dead for several hours. And he just comes up just super jacked.
Yep. Got that nice pump too.
Here's a point I want to make. So in part one, there was a part where, like, he was upstairs, and as he walked, the ceiling was crumbling.
Yeah, the dust in the ceiling. Right? Yeah.
In this movie, he comes to the morgue. You see the little weight thing that says he's 330 pounds, right?
Yep.
Do you mean to tell me a 300-pound man was able to get into the guy's back seat without him noticing or knowing that he was there?
Wow.
Then get out without being seen.
Yeah.
Somehow get to the other side of him.
Yep.
So that he's behind him when he turns around.
Look, I would give this guy credit that he had just gotten the shit kicked out of him for like 5 minutes.
Sure.
His eyes puffy and swollen. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He ain't looking in the back seat. He think he done left this guy
behind. In the back seat. When you get in your car, you'd be like, oh shit. Like, it's right there.
Look, I didn't even think that he climbed in the that he climbed out of the back seat. I was thinking maybe he just opened the door to mess with him.
I would buy that, but
maybe
because when this is the end of the movie we're talking about. When I saw that and I was like, oh, the door is open. I was like, dude, fuck that car. Just walk away. Just turn around and walk away. And he starts backing, and I'm like, oh, all right, good. You're backing away from the car, but let's go. And then he bumps into him. I'm like, oh. Shit, I didn't expect for him to be behind him. I thought he might actually escape. So, like I said, one broke the mold where we had three survivors. At that time, every movie, pretty much every horror movie ever, they're always only giving you one survivor. Right. This one, they were like, oh, fuck that. You know what? We shouldn't have let so many people live in one. So we're killing everybody. So the no survivor thing in this movie. So, and him just living. So that leads
So that just leads us
to the discussion I wanted to have now, and this is how we're going to finish up the review of the movie. Is they leave it open for a part three. I was like, okay, eventually other people who work at the morgue are going to show up, or more bodies are going to be delivered, because they said there were 9 bodies. We only see his body get delivered. So what's going to happen now? Is he going to hang out at the morgue? Is he going to find somewhere else to go? He doesn't have his mother directing him anymore.
Right.
He's just a straight up killing machine. How many years are, now? It's been 7 years in real time.
No, I don't think there's gonna be a sequel.
Yeah, and it only made $1.6 million.
Right.
Now,
I mean, going straight to DVD though, that's pretty impressive.
Well, what I was gonna say, but it's also from something that had a name. It should have made more money than that going straight to DVD, in my opinion. This is before
it's a sequel. You're saying?
Yeah, it's a sequel to a movie that made $16 million.
Right.
And so, again, yeah, that major gap has a say in it. Also, at this time, 2014 is when things were kind of starting to transition more to the people not buying movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like Netflix was starting to take off. I think we've had streaming since about 2014. Yeah, 2000. Yeah, because Netflix was still DVD based in 2014, but they had some streaming starting. So I could see a sequel being made with WWE having the network.
Sure.
Or the deals they have now, and it going straight to like Netflix or something like that, being a B movie. But I don't think Glenn Jacobs would come back for it.
Right.
So we already discussed the possibility of it. Who do you think could play the character in another sequel?
Hornswoggle.
Hornswoggle can do all things.
Great Khali.
Well, they barely let him speak, so.
Yeah, I don't know.
It can only be Braun Strowman.
Yeah and no, though, because I feel like he almost has his own energy.
Yeah, he doesn't feel like a killer. He seems like a fighter, a hand getter.
Well, then again, if you could make him look even crazier than he already looks, I mean that in a good way. Like, just make him a little more frightening, because I mean he has the size. I mean, that's all. I feel like for those roles, that's all you really need to do.
Yeah,
you know, you don't really need to have him do that much emotion, unless you want to give him a mask and not, you know, have him be more of like a what Kane was, which is pretty much Jason in the second one. You know,
right? See, what kind of disappointed me was the Will character that they had, who was himself a big guy.
Yeah, no, and I was disappointed by that too. I was like, oh,
he's gonna
get a few good shots in or something.
Like, all I thought about, I can't remember which Jason movie it was, where the black guy tried to face off with Jason.
That was Jason 8, Takes Manhattan.
I was like, man, this, I was like, her brother about to shoot the fair one with Kane. And then he just gets choked out.
Yeah, man. No, I saw that too. Because when I saw a big dude, I was like, I feel like what I like about both movies is, like, Mustafa mentioned earlier, is the physicality. Like, you feel like it's like wrestling, but it's played up a bit more. So it almost feels like kind of like watching a hardcore match. So I feel like they should have did a little bit more with dude, just for his size alone. And they should have got a few good shots in
this,
on him.
In this movie, nobody could compete with him at all. Like, nobody.
He was like God tier.
And it was also just funny, like, all that. So this takes place directly, like the next day after one. But all this information is out there. Oh, he's called the Hand of God.
Yeah.
And his mother, like, how does Tamara know all this? Oh, his mother, she was a religious zealot, and she kept him in a cage.
But here's the thing. 2014, if you're thinking of internet, social media, you may have some people that know everything. That are
his mother was not on Facebook. She might have been on Twitter.
But I'm just saying, you know, posting. You just for those people that are obsessed about, you know what I mean, certain... You know, there's just definitely a lot of people obsessed about serial killers now. So,
man, the world was so much different in 2014. We're looking at this through 2021 eyes. Information was not out there the way that it is now.
That's true.
Like, the world was a much, much more sane place back then, I could say.
Yeah, because you got the newscast, and the newscast was like, all these bodies are here, murder, blah, blah, blah. So you can tell it just freshly happened.
Right.
Yeah. So there was no way she would have had that information. No way.
Like, they knew, like, the only information they could have had was that he was the killer, because the people who escaped would have probably told them, like, yeah, the guy who tried to kill us, he's laying in the atrium or whatever, with a hole in his eye socket or whatever. So they would have had that information. But as far as knowing anything about his upbringing and all of that stuff about his mother, I can't see that 24 hours later at all.
Right. That would have been at least 3 weeks on a
his mother was Margaret
on a 2020 special.
Yeah, that is new. Like I said, if even if it was like, then again, 8 years, I feel like would be a bit much to know. Even if someone is a serial killer, that wouldn't stay in the news.
Like the only information they would have had is that there was a 4 year gap in their in their timeline.
Right.
Well, not even in their timeline. There was a 4 year gap from when the first bodies were discovered, when the cops shot them, and that's all in the first movie. And then this happens. So all this is 4 years after the first bodies were discovered, and this is the same night.
Right.
Pretty much. This is pretty much the same night as the first movie.
And he did a lot.
And so when you think about that.
Right.
When you think about that, how long of a night are they? Yeah, do they live in Alaska? Is this 30 days a night? I just thought about that.
That's true.
Right.
The first movie takes completely at night, and this happens the exact same time, and it's nighttime again. We don't ever see daylight.
It's true.
The bodies are brought. All this is happening at the same time. This is the longest night in human history ever recorded. Like I said, this has to take place in Alaska. This should have been called 30 Days a Night, See No Evil.
30 Days a Night.
I didn't like the way they killed him or tried to kill him in the second one, where he just kind of
embalming fluid, basically.
Yeah, but he did it so nonchalant.
And then he dropped the blade. I was like, get this hacking and slicing.
Yeah, I know.
That's also why I call him the pussy. I'm like, because when he walked out and he got in the car, I was like, he didn't do what needs to be done.
Right.
He didn't do what needs to be done.
Cut his head off.
I was like, right. Man, he's called the hand of God. Cut his hands off.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Should have went for the head.
So, yeah, if they do decide to make a third one, obviously it's WWE. I don't even think they like Braun Strowman enough to give him that opportunity. like they'll go find somebody.
Right.
Or they'll just replace him. They'll probably, what's AJ Styles' bodyguard's name?
Amos.
Yeah. Almost. Yeah, they put Almost. Shit, actually, at this point, I'd like to see Bobby Lashley play the character. Getting him to start eating people. Or you said Bray Wyatt, he's too small for the role. But I do think that The Fiend could be in a movie if WWE decides to go back to him. Because honestly, I like WWE horror films. Like Oculus, which we'll be reviewing later on, and this is a spoiler, I guess, for that, is one of my favorite horror films of all time. That is a really good movie if you've never seen it. I think you've seen it, right? Oculus?
No, I haven't.
So if you guys are interested, you're more than welcome to come back on for that. Because I know you've always been a horror fan and bloody movie fan.
I feel like I just recently started getting more into horror. Yeah.
I know you always like the violence, I should say.
Yeah, yeah. No, I never really watched
action, blood.
I feel like I just recently started getting into more like classic horror movies. So it's an interesting genre. All
right. So overall, A through F for See No Evil Part 1, or out of 10, what do you give it?
See No Evil Part 1, I think out of 10, I would probably give that like a 6.5 maybe.
All right.
Yeah, I'd give it a 6. 6 out of 10.
I'm giving it a 3 out of 5.
I gave it a 6.5. See No Evil Part 2?
I'd give that like a 3. That was a 3 for me.
Yeah, I would say. I mean, it exists, so they did that. It came out.
To me, I don't know.
But it didn't drive anything.
Right. It wasn't treading any new water.
Yeah, it was just like definitely more killing, but for less reasons.
So three. It was a 3 out of 10?
Yeah.
Mine is a 1.5 out of 5.
I give it a 6. Like I said, better characterization, but everything else is just... Actually, I'd probably give it a 5 or 5.5. Now that I think about it, yeah. So... Yeah, so that's been the reviews of See No Evil Parts 1 and Part 2. Make sure that you guys click that bell and hit that subscribe button so that you're notified whenever new episodes go up. If you enjoyed this episode or if you didn't enjoy this episode, give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. You guys want to give out your social media where people can find you and let them know about any plans for 2021.
All right. people could find us on bandcamp.com/immortalgirlfriend. We have all of our music up there, and everything else. I mean, it's on all other digital streaming services. So,
all right. And we'll have links to all of their content in the description as well. So if you're interested, you haven't discovered the sounds of Immortal Girlfriend, you'll definitely enjoy it and you'll be able to discover it. Check out Black Challenger as well, which was Will's solo project.
Yes, sir.
So great, great, great music. The Dark Knights of Synthway. is there Mustafa? You want to give out your social media?
You can catch me at Xavier Mustafa on Facebook and on Twitter. You can also catch my other podcast where this will be on as well at XM Cinema. And that's on Facebook and Twitter as well.
And you catch me at TE78 over on Twitter. You can check us out on Facebook. We have the Slamcasters fan page. And we also have the Slamcasters Slam Board, which is more of a group discussion page. Other than that, be sure to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast from. This is completely different content over there on the podcast than what you get over here on YouTube. So we'd like for you to be subscribed to us everywhere that we are. Looking forward to major things for the rest of the year. And apologies to our comrade. We didn't even acknowledge that he wasn't on the show today. The natural Chris Black couldn't make it on this episode. But we hope that everything is working out well for him and that he's doing fine. Like I said, we up out of here. Holla at your boys. Come get slammed. Peace.
I can't feel all the weight and the time that you take. Empty fears into space, said goodbyes, brighter days. Always thought it was you. After all we've been through, now I see it's only